Good evening. I am Chris Lee of Southeastern 14 here to talk some SEC baseball tonight.
Hey, Texas A&M, this one is wrapping up. Or not, getting close as we do this. And we've already had Florida and NC State in the books today. You may recognize a new face here. You know me, you know Alfred, if you've been around this channel. Graham Doty joins. This is going to be part of our channel going forward. Very excited to do this. This man has called a game or two in the SEC in his life. Graham, I'll let you take a moment to introduce yourself to the audience, if you would, please.
Sure. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Alfred. Graham Doty from Oxford, Mississippi, born and raised, went to Ole Miss, graduated from Ole Miss in 2010, knew right away I wanted to get into sports broadcasting, so do a lot of play-by-play, 12 years, Ole Miss Radio Network, and then TV streaming side, anywhere, everywhere, in a press box, in a booth, somewhere, about half the teams in the SEC, ACC, Big 12, you name it. So couldn't imagine doing anything else. I absolutely love play-by-play, the SEC, born and raised in it. So excited to be here.
How many SEC games have you been in the press box for?
In baseball, I've been I was thinking about this earlier today. I have been in all of them except for LSU and Texas A&M. And obviously have not been to Oklahoma or Texas yet.
Well, and I mean, we've been, I don't know how many hundreds of SEC games you and I have been the press box for separately, not together. But anyway, point is a lot of experience here. We got some stuff to talk about. We got into Tennessee last night. By the way, apologies for that broadcast. That was a technological disaster. I did figure out this morning what went wrong, you know, of course, well after we're off the air, but I've got that fixed. So tonight's will be much better if you were around for that last night. Anyway, we do apologize, but we're going to get into Kentucky and Texas A&M here in a minute. They are in the ninth, A&M holding a 5-0 lead, not just the game tonight. Unfortunately, we keep having to talk about injuries. Aggies had a serious one tonight. We've got North Carolina State and Florida in the books, the Wolfpack sent home. Florida still alive. Who had before the tournament had Florida winning a game in Omaha? Pretty much nobody. But that's the case. That's the fun of baseball. We'll talk about them in just a minute. But a reminder, BetOnline, your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup playoffs this season. Every stat, matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino. Get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our 150 slots games. Head to the website today. Get in on the action. Use the promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here. Well, gentlemen, we have seen NC State sent home. We've seen Virginia sent home. Kentucky looks like it's about to take its first loss. I think this is the way the stage is going to be set. Tennessee sitting pretty in the left side of the bracket, up 2-0, awaiting either North Carolina State or Virginia. Won't know till tomorrow what that's going to be. So that's on one side. On the other side, A&M looking to go up 2-0 in its side of the bracket. If it can hold on and beat Kentucky here, Aggies have just hit a two-out double in the ninth. Actually, make that a single. He just got thrown out at second. So we'll go to the bottom of the ninth here between Kentucky and A&M. Kentucky will need to get five to keep playing baseball tonight. And then we will see what happens tomorrow between the loser of this game and Florida. But guys, let's start with the probably the biggest news of the day in the SEC, and it does not involve winning or losing. It involves Jace Laviolette, who was running the bases, pulled a hamstring tonight. I think we were both watching it. I'll start with you, Alfred. If Jace Laviolette is out for a while, and look, he stayed in the game. He had an at-bat later in the inning, but you could tell that hamstring was bothering him. They kept him out of the game. I'm guessing that's one of those things that when the adrenaline isn't flowing, it's going to get worse. The Aggies, Alfred, could be without Jace Laviolette for who knows with the pulled hamstring. Hopefully not, but already an injury to Shane Sadeo, already an injury to Braden Montgomery. Now you've got arguably their best player could potentially be out.
Yeah, of course. And Graham, I just want to say thank you for joining us. This is going to be great for having you on, obviously, with all your experience. And I couldn't be happier to have someone on with me and Chris talking baseball. So once again, thank you for joining us. But getting into Lavalette's injury, yeah, it's tough. The good thing for A&M, they're obviously going to have some days to get him rested if they hold on to win this game, like I think they will do just based on how much control they've taken. But yeah, I mean, first Montgomery, then Sadeo, and now Lavalette, and it's three big pieces on the three side or the two sides of baseball that you're not going to have. And you know, it's A&M's credit. They've lasted without it very, very well. I mean, they're going to start 2-0 in Omaha, and statistically, that puts you in the best spot to win a national title. But I mean, this is going to hurt because, you know, I think we're starting to set up, if I had to go ahead and, you know, see into the future, we're starting to set up an A&M Tennessee final on paper. If that's what we get, those two injuries could be big because those are two guys that can make an impact, or those three injuries, excuse me, if Lavalette gets actually out for the rest of the tournament. Those are three big injuries that could affect them in a series like that. So yeah, big news for the Aggies. I think that's going to be huge. And obviously it was a good call by Schlossnagel to take him out and kind of just sit him the rest of this game, because at this point A&M's taking control and you're going to have days of rest to get him up to speed if you can at all, by all means possible. And they'll need him. I think I've kind of given A&M the benefit of the doubt with these injuries, but a third one here is really, really costly because now you're without your two best hitters. Not that they have, you know, other great hitters in that lineup, but you're without your two best that could lead you to some hardware, and there's a possibility you're not going to have that. So it's a huge deal, and hopefully it would be big for the Aggies if they could get him rested between now and their next game.
Graham, I was just thinking tonight, you and I've watched a lot of playoff baseball between regionals, super regionals, you name it. Every once in a blue moon, you will see a team lose a star in the postseason. Although I can't really name, I name a few. Vanderbilt lost Walker Buehler in the national title game, I think in 2015, ended up tearing an elbow ligament and ended up having surgery, didn't pitch for another year and a half or so. But that was the last game of the season. A&M has lost Montgomery in game one of a super regional. It lost Shane Sadeo. When was it? Game one of Oregon? When was it, Alfred? I can't remember now. Yeah, same series. And now if Lavalette's out, my goodness. A team losing one stud in the postseason is big. I've never seen a team lose three. And I guess Sadeo doesn't fit in the category of the other two, but he's one of their better relievers. By the way, Kentucky's just hit a home run to finally get on the scoreboard. That was Ryan Nicholson. So not quite over here in Omaha. But, have you ever seen anything like what's going on with A&M?
Not to this extent. Not three key players, focal points of a roster and lineup and rotation and pitching staff. It's just, it's kind of, I look at it in two ways. One, it can catapult you. It can kind of be a rallying cry. Okay, we know, you know, so-and-so, in this case, like Montgomery, who's an absolute stud. Like, he's out. We know he's not going to play. And then, I mean, you just – next man up, as cliche as it is, coaches say it for a reason. It's an absolute fact. And especially if you want to win an NCAA championship, you're just going to have breaks go your way and just have somebody step up that you never in a million years thought that you would see step up in big moments. And then the other thing, which Alfred touched on, as long as you win those first two games, like in Omaha, if you stay on the winner side of the bracket, like you do get a lot of downtime. Like you can go to the zoo as many times as you want. You can go on that bridge back and forth, you name it, whatever you want to do. So like that is a benefit, if there is one, for Texas A&M. They will have a lot of downtime. I'm sure they will take it very easy tomorrow. And then I think their next game, I think they play at 6 o'clock on Wednesday. So I mean, they should get a little bit of time to rest, regroup, and Slosnagel and his staff, you know, they'll kind of come up with their game plan. And if they want to make a tinker here or there in the lineup, they got plenty of time to think about it.
Graham, I want to ask you this, and I guess we don't know the severity, but every time I see hamstring injury, that almost never seems like a thing where dude's back the next day or a couple days later, or if that does happen, feels like it lingers. Like, I'll give an example. I was in Atlanta Friday night watching the Braves and Alfred's Rays. Michael Harris goes first to third on a double. I'm like, why is he only a third? I look up and he's clutching his hamstring. Hadn't played since. Again, I don't want to read one size fits all, but anytime I see a hamstring, that feels like kind of one of those things you don't, it's not like a lot of times you don't just come from back from that the next day. I would love to be wrong here, because I think a tournament without Jace Lavallette, I feel like as fans of the game, we're being cheated, but that one worried me.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, everybody's different with their hamstrings. I feel like, you know, lateral movement, quick movements, that is what's going to be the challenging part. Like, you can go north, south, and I think be okay. It's just the quick movement, especially with a hamstring.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe you could DH him, but, I mean, you still got to run to first and, you know, lean on that, you know, for – to get some drive into the ball. I'm just concerned about. But all right, let's talk about the good stuff, okay? We've talked about the bad stuff here but look, that it's just part of the game. Jace Lavallette's potential 1-1 candidate in the draft next year. Guys, I don't know who wants to start. I guess I'll start with you, Alfred. Ryan Prager tonight. Kid had a no-hitter until the seventh. I think it was Nicholson that broke it up with the single. Not overpowering, but as we said time and time again, when that park is playing like a pitcher's park, which it does often, that you just need command and keep the ball from getting hit hard. And I think they said at some point in the broadcast, this is not a guy that gets rattled by the small ball stuff that Kentucky can do. Ryan Prager tonight pitched like an All-American, which I mean, it's no surprise. If you'd said name the best pitcher in the tournament, I would have said starter. It's probably either him or Jamie Arnold of Florida State. And best reliever, Evan Aschenbeck, which is why I've been big on the Aggies. But Ryan Prager delivered the Ryan Prager-like performance that we were kind of expecting and not that start that he had in the Super last week, Alfred.
Yeah, and you already said the big key to this is he does not get rattled by the small ball play Kentucky beats you by. And that was very key tonight. I mean, just one walk and two hits in 6 2/3. I mean, that's... Kentucky's not going to do any damage as the game's gone final, actually, 5-1 A&M. But yeah, I mean, that was the biggest thing. He didn't let the Wildcats get on base. And Kentucky, that's how they do their damages, is with guys on the base and base running and the steals and whatnot. And I mean, if Kentucky can't do that, they couldn't get any runs. And we saw tonight they didn't get a run until this ninth inning. So he was massive, and have that no hitter kind of just, you know, prolonged almost, it seems like, the inevitable with Texas A&M's hitting coming through like it did in the sixth. And I mean, because, you know, Kentucky's pitching, give them credit too. They kept with this A&M team as well early in this game. When I was watching this game, it was, you know, a pitcher's duel, no scores between Moore and Prager. And it just continued to go on that way. And, you know, Prager, you know, speaking on him once again, it was just the small ball, the avoiding the small ball from Kentucky that he did and that he provided that kind of got A&M in the position they did to eventually take that big sixth inning and eventually explode onto this win. So yeah, Kentucky, you know, being unfazed by the small ball play is huge, because if they were going to meet this Kentucky team again, they already know that they can do that with at least Prager. And I'm sure that they have other pitchers behind them that can do the same.
Graham, your thoughts on Prager and anything else you saw out of A&M tonight?
I just thought he was outstanding. I mean, one of the big things that jumps out to me, only one walk and 6 2/3, and kind of what Alfred has touched on. Kentucky, they're so good at putting pressure on whoever they play. And if you don't allow any base runners at all, like, that's just going to pay huge dividends for you. So he was able to locate tonight, threw a lot of strikes, 95 total pitches, 65 were strikes. So you could tell he felt comfortable. He was in control in a big moment, too. I mean, this is a very, very good Kentucky lineup. And Ryan Nicholson, by the way, he is, you know, phenomenal. I saw him play a handful of times this season. He was good tonight for Kentucky. He had the first hit of the ball game. But, I mean, if you're Texas A&M with all the injuries that we've talked about, you have to win this game no matter what. I mean, just win that second game, get a day off, then you can kind of pick and choose, try to come up with a game plan, who you want to take the mound for game three.
Yeah, another thing, Josh Stewart finished the game for the Aggies tonight. Now, he's one of their really good arms, and again, I think their bullpen is as good as anybody's. They've got a little bit of everything, but he was probably, I don't know, seventh or eighth in their pecking order of arms. Again, you know, and he would have been probably three or four for a lot of SEC teams, maybe even two. And that speaks to their depth, but here's what I'm getting at. When your margin of error has shrunk with the Sadeo injury and one major offensive injury and maybe now a second with LaViolette, getting by without having to use Aschenbeck again, mm-hmm. without having to go to Cortez again, not he probably wasn't going to be available anyway with the pitch count he had, but you know, some other guys they had that might have been a little bit ahead of them. Now their pitching's a little fresher. That's one. But they just didn't let Kentucky get into doing Kentucky things tonight. You guys, Alfred, you mentioned the base running. I don't think Kentucky stole a base tonight. It did not. It had four hits. One was a double. One was a home run. And probably the biggest moment of the game, guys, was a very un-Kentucky-like play. When Nolan McCarthy misjudged a line drive from Ale Camarillo, there could have been, you know, probably would have been an out most of the time, but I don't know if he heard it off the bat wrong or whatever, but he starts coming in. Next thing you know, it's way over his head, a couple of runs score. That was probably the biggest hit of the ball game. And again, just not a very Kentucky-like thing. It was James McCoy. McCoy was playing right tonight. I don't know if I got that one wrong, but just if I did, there's my correction. I just did not think, but between those two things, Alfred, it didn't feel like Kentucky baseball tonight.
No, A&M certainly got them out of their comfort zone. And the start of it, I think, was Prager, like we were just talking about. But also just the mentally, it just seemed like that little blunder they had in the outfield wasn't there. I mean, you mentioned McCarthy. McCarthy's an incredible defensive center fielder. I saw Kentucky play in person in Hoover. He was awesome there. He had like two phenomenal catches on the wall at the Met. And throughout the season, he's been great too. He's one of the top guys, I think, defensively this league has to offer. But yeah, I mean, I think that just, it translates over to guys like McCoy in the outfield. It's just kind of uncharacteristic stuff. And the A&M's going to make you pay for it with the kind of hitting they provide. And they certainly did that. I mean, you had, like you said, another guy too, you know, offensively that A&M kind of did, A&M had that threw Kentucky off, a guy that they had was Shot once again. 3 for 5 with a run, 2 RBIs. He's been on a tear, I think, since A&M started getting these injuries, and he's been a key factor in how they've been able to keep pace to the play that they've shown all season. And he once again did that tonight. But yeah, the hitting just threw off this Kentucky team just enough to kind of get Mason Moore out of the game. And, you know, they even got to this Kentucky bullpen a little bit still with O'Brien and Byers going out there, which was key too. And we haven't really even seen O'Brien give up that kind of stuff in a while. I mean, it's been since before the tournament. So yeah, it was just uncharacteristic, like you said, Chris, for Kentucky on all levels. And it started in the field. It started with Prager throwing their lineup off guard, and A&M, just once they started pouring it on, they continue to, with guys like Shot who have just stepped up time and time again with all the injuries they've had. And that's been key. And if there's any way they're going to keep winning, that's how they're going to do it. So they get a lot of rest now, and they just have to evaluate what they did right tonight, because this is hands down their biggest win this season. And if you start 2-0, you have a good shot at a national title. So they're sitting in the catbird seat.
Yeah. The point on O'Brien is a good one, because the line, okay, he pitches one inning, gives up one earned run, but he gave up a couple more that were charged to Moore, and they got a couple of hard hit balls off him. And you're right. It feels like, I don't know when his last bad outing was, probably the SEC tournament or before it, but it hasn't been in this postseason. They have not really had a lockdown guy in the pen other than Johnny Hummel early until late in the season. He kind of became that. So it just kind of felt like when O'Brien came in and couldn't stop the bleeding in a spot where they really needed it, just felt like it wasn't going to be Kentucky's night. So I presume that Kentucky will go to Dominic Neiman because, I mean, why wouldn't they? I think he's answered the bell for every start this season. He just – Moore had gotten better, didn't have his best night tonight. Wasn't bad. And, again, some of that was O'Brien giving up his runners. Boozer's burned. I wouldn't think they could bring him back. Yeah, he pitched Saturday. That's just not going to happen. Maybe you get him if you're able to get Florida tomorrow. Maybe you can bring him back for an elimination game later. But yeah, I think Neiman isn't on the spot now because he just didn't. It feels like it's been a while since he strung a couple of starts together. So. There's that one. Aggies get a big win. I'm interested to see what the odds are. I was looking tonight, a guy that does some college baseball odds. We're saying college baseball odds to win the World Series. I think Tennessee was almost a 50% favorite at this point. And really? I think A&M was 23%. That's before it got the win tonight. So I'm sure that's going to climb a couple percentage points, although I presume you can't factor in the Lavalette injury. So that would be interesting. But I feel like Tennessee is probably the, I don't know if I'm going to say overwhelming favorite to win it, because I think, as we noted, A&M still got, you know, if you could throw Prager and Aschenbeck out there, get a good four innings from Cortez at some point, you know, now you get to reset your pitching a little bit. You get to take a deep breath. You win one more. You're fresh for the title series. Maybe even without a couple of big bats, if you get that Ryan Prager, you know, and you get Aschenbeck and those guys out of the pen doing their thing, maybe you can win it without a lot of runs. But if that's Tennessee staring at you, Graham, on the other side of the bracket, that's going to be awfully tough.
Yeah, it is for sure. And especially with what their offense has been doing all season long, and especially in the postseason. I mean, they have been on absolute tear and on fire. I mean, you can tell this is a Tennessee team for Tony Vitello. Like, when you go through scars in postseason play in Omaha and in their super regional when Notre Dame beat them 2 years ago, I mean, I'm a believer you learn from those experiences and it helps you down the road. And you kind of get a sense that this is a Tennessee team. They are absolutely dialed in. They are locked in. And they just kind of have a good sense of what it's going to take to finally get over the hump and play in the national championship game to try to win their first championship in baseball.
And Alfred, they're old too. I mean, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on Tennessee tonight, but it does feel like we've got an A&M Tennessee matchup probably looming. Odds are pretty strong that both teams, from where they are with the pitching standpoint and everything else, are going to advance at this point. But I mean, I was looking at it. I mean, Christian Moore's been there. I can't remember if he's a third-year player or fourth-year player. He's going in the draft this year. Burke's been there 3 years. Dreiling's been there 3 years, I believe. Stark, I think, is a fourth-year guy.
Yeah.
You can correct me Stark if I'm wrong on this. I'm trying to mentally go through the lineup.
Hunter Ensley was on that 2022 team. He's a third year. Drew Beam. Right, Drew
Beam. I think Ensley might even be a fourth-year guy.
I might be
wrong. Yeah, I mean, at least 3 years. Mm-hmm. I said Dreiling, third year. Tears and Wright, third year guy.
Right.
Beam, third year guy. Kirby Connell, I think he's on his 11th year. something close to that. He's pitched forever. I think he's pitched since the Obama administration. so, I mean, you've got a lot of and you compare that to A&M. Lavalette's a second-year guy. Montgomery's third year. I mean, they're just not quite as old. You've got Appel and Hayden Schott, I think, are third-year guys. But I just feel like Graham made an important point. You got a lot of dudes who played a lot of ball in that dugout. And now Kentucky might be the team that can come close to matching them in experience, but going to be tough for Kentucky after going down 0-2 and staring up and needing to get a couple against Florida and A&M. To get by this with the best part of your rotation in your rearview mirror.
Yeah, I think so. And the key thing with Tennessee is, I mean, that they've been to Omaha three of the last 4 years. So no matter what guy you look at on that roster, second, third, or fourth year, he's been to Omaha is what that means. And he knows what this place is about at this point. And it's just a bunch of them kind of coming together and doing this. I mean, you had plenty of guys on that quote unquote unbeatable 2022 team. The key ones, Burke, Ensley, they were on there. Drew Beam was a big Sunday starter on that team. That's how kind of how he got his name, was on that team playing for them. And it's just kind of, I like what Grant said. It kind of just feels like it's all coming to a point with Tennessee at this point, with what's been building, what Tony Vitale has built there. And, you know, I said it to you, Chris, too, you know, weeks heading into this, you know, Tony Vitale has entered that Dave Van Horn territory of when is it going to come? When is his title going to come at this point? And I think it could very well be this year. And to actually, I saw this today, to kind of go back into the betting thing, the future for Tennessee right now, as of this morning to win the national title, was minus 190. And
wow.
Anytime you have a team with a future that's minus, that means that means they're above 50% is what that means. So they have all things clicking right now, and A&M does have the pitching, but at the same time, we saw Tennessee get to Jamie Arnold just enough to kind of, you know, put a, not a nail in that coffin. Absolutely not. I mean, that game was back and forth the entire time, but to keep up more so with Florida State, because Florida State was up in that game, and they've done it from behind in games. They've done it ahead in games, like they did against North Carolina. They've kind of cruised so far, and with this rest they got coming, and they're waiting on the winner of FSU and UNC, it just there's nothing telling me that they won't continue to. So I feel like we're going to see this team at least in the championship series, and if they get A&M, it's going to be a sit down on the couch, get your popcorn, and get ready, because Prager, Ashenbeck, and Cortez are going to give that lineup all they have, and that lineup's going to give those three guys and the guys beyond that in A&M's staff all they have. So I think we're coming to a head at that point with this championship series. And honestly, it's the best two teams in college baseball I think we've seen all year, for the most part, all year, those two teams. And we couldn't have asked for anything better than that.
All right, let's talk Florida, NC State. I keep feeling like this Florida thing's going to run out of gas, and it just hasn't. kind of some familiar storylines in this one, guys. Based on what we've seen, Jack Caglione hits a home run. Brandon Neely finishes it with another dominant outing. Graham, I'll let you start. What caught your eye in this one?
Big thing for me was just Caglione. Like, he got the start, only one inning, like 33 pitches he threw today. And there was a shot. He was in the dugout, and O'Sullivan went up to him, and like he was touching his arm, he was touching his elbow, and you just wonder what in the world are the, like, what are they talking about? Because he's so good as a two-way player, and just the fact that they're able to win this game today where he goes one inning, I thought it was incredible. And to me, they still really haven't played their best baseball in Omaha. Yeah. And I mean, They lost to A&M by one run, and then they beat NC State today. So, like, they're still not playing to their potential, and here they are. They're still in the tournament. They still have a very good chance. And their offense has just not done a whole lot. I mean, when you look at what they've done so far this week, like Ashton Wilson, who's played a lot down the stretch, he's 0-for-8. Cade Curlin, he's 0-for-8 in the tournament. Colby Shelton, he's 0-for-7. Heyman is 1-for-8, and Heyman's a guy. He's got 16 home runs this season. They have not been able to have their offense click. And then I'm just fascinated if Caglione, if he's not healthy, like if he can't go, like what does that look like for this Florida team?
Yeah, I know that velo was down. I think 89-90 on the fastball was what it was at the end of that outing, which is why he came out. I mean, that usually sits more like 95, 96, touches 98, 99. I mean, when you see velo drop off like that, that's usually not a really good sign. But, you know, you also, you know, worst case scenario, let's say he's got an elbow injury. you're looking at Shohei Ohtani dealing with that right now in the bigs. He's going to sit out this year pitching, and he's still hitting. So I think you still get the biggest value out of Jack Caglione either way, even if pitching's done for this year. You know, you still got a top, I don't know, top three hitter in college baseball sitting in your dugout probably. So there's that. But, I mean, it's funny. We talked about A&M's injuries, but again, Florida loses Ty Evans right before the tournament. You know, you just think that's going to be with the team that didn't have a lot of margin of error. That's going to be the thing that, you know, probably sinks Florida. It didn't. And Graham, you know this. You saw Ole Miss's run. Sometimes you just need a couple of good arms. And Alfred, I feel like you're the card carrying member of the Brandon Neely fan club here after witnessing what he did in Clemson. And no judgment there. How can he not be? But guess who got the ball, and guess who did it again at the end?
Yeah, I'm going to make a request to get Brandon Neely's arm genetics, because this is this is pretty ridiculous at this point, what he's doing game in and game out. I mean, three innings today, six strikeouts. That's the thing too, Chris. He's striking out at least three people every time he goes out there. Like it's nothing. And he just continues to motor these guys down. He earns another save, gives up only one hit and one walk. That was it. He had one wild pitch, but you know, in 11 batters face, if you're able to get only one hit and one walk, you're doing something right. And he did it right again. And, you know, I got to give credit too, to his supporting cast. I mean, Jake Clemente, to his credit, came in and did his thing as well. One walk in just an inning. Cade Fisher ended up getting the win tonight. Four innings for him, four hits. He did give up the three earned runs, but again, Florida's offense kind of just, you know, had his back there and allowed him to get the win. But yeah, Brandon Neely, I'm going to continue to say it. I think I said this back during the Super Regional. He's going to pitch every game Florida has from here on out, man. Still. And it's like you're going to have to pencil him in. And I think he's just looked at O'Sullivan and has just been like, hey, look, I can go out there in the end every single time at this point. Just remember that. And he's like, okay, yeah. So I'm going to, you know, play that card again and roll with that. And it's worked. I mean, I got to give credit to Kevin O'Sullivan too. He's been brilliant, I think, managing the game heading into this postseason. That's what's gotten Florida this far, is his 17 years or something like that of experience managing in Gainesville. And he's been here millions of times. He took Florida in kind of unfamiliar territory, being away from Gainesville, and he got them all the way to this point. And they have, I mean, I will just say, I did not think Florida would get a win in Omaha, and they got a win in Omaha. That is a great season considering where they were before Hoover. You know what I mean? And that's, yeah. I think that's the bottom line with it. And guys like Neely have stepped up big time. Caglione obviously has stepped up big time. I think we all could have guessed that a little bit, but it's been the leaders on the team kind of stepping up, and the leader himself, Kevin O'Sullivan, really stepping up with his own coaching skills. And here's Florida now facing a team at least they're familiar with in Kentucky in an elimination game. And they have a chance to go back at A&M after losing a heartbreaker, you know, when they almost came back a night ago against them. And that's huge. That's huge for the Gators. And they're still do not count them out yet, because they still have life. And when they still have life, they tend to make it a ball game with anybody.
All right, Graham, I'm going to read you Brandon Neely's pitching lines working backwards. And you tell me, you've seen a lot of baseball in the SEC. You tell me if you've ever seen anything like this. I'm thinking of one name, and you're probably thinking of the same name too. I won't say it. You can say it later, but even I don't think this guy did this. All right, this is Brandon. These are Florida's last six games or whatever it's been. NC State today throws 45 pitches, three innings. Doesn't allow a run, strikes out six, walks one. A&M on, what was that, Friday? Saturday, I guess, right? Yeah. Two innings, throws 23 pitches, strikes out three, gives up one hit, no runs. Clemson, 72 pitches on, that would have been the Sunday game, mm-hmm. where the workload got to him, threw 72 pitches, gave up three runs. In four innings. Before that, Clemson game before that, the day before, he throws 59 pitches. So the day after throwing 59, he throws 72. Four innings, no runs, 7 strikeouts, 1 walk. That Oklahoma State game, that I think that was that the clincher, Alfred, or was that the runner up the Friday the night game?
The Friday night was 100 plus. The clincher, okay. I think, had a little less, but that was the difference. Was 100 plus was the first game they played, or the game before?
Yeah, anyway, in the opener, which I can't remember if they lost that to Nebraska now. Gosh, my mind is blurring. Anyway, he throws 37 pitches, comes back 2 days later, throws 104 against Oklahoma State, strikes out 11, walks 3. I mean, that's incredible. He's pitched 6 games this postseason, thrown anywhere from 23 to 104 pitches. There's one guy that I've seen throw this many innings that I can think of in recent SEC history. I'm sure we're thinking of the same guy, but I just can't think of many times. And A&M could push it with Evan Aschenbach, by the way. You could see Jim Schlossnagel try the same thing. No, I think they've got a few more pieces around him to where you don't have to do that. But it is incredible to see the workload that Brandon Neely is taking on. And he just keeps, shoving every time he's out there.
Just what a weapon he is. 58 pitches in the World Series, but as you said, he's a guy, kind of got that rubber arm. He can throw 20 pitches one day and then bounce back a day or two later and throw you 75. So you need guys like that in your bullpen, especially in tournament play, in postseason play, where pitching is so pivotal and paramount. And he's been so good down the stretch. And I'm sure they'll lean on him big time the rest of the way.
A lot of innings. 303 pitches in the NCAA tournament. Yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, the only guy that I've seen, it was the way that Dave Van Horn used Kevin Copps a couple years ago.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can really think that compares.
I was thinking Copp, and then as like going way back for Ole Miss, somebody like Scott Biddle. Scott Biddle was a starter / Mike Bianco would put him, if the game was on the line in the fourth or fifth inning, Mike would put him out there and Scott Biddle would just, carve everybody up. He was a first round pick, but had arm issues and came back and just wasn't really the same. But those two guys, that's good company to be with if you're Neely, for sure.
Yeah. And the weird thing, Neely's going to get picked in the draft here in a couple of weeks too. I mean, sometimes you will see coaches try something like that with a guy that's not considered a pro arm.
Yeah.
Copps wasn't, and he kind of played his way into it. But a little bit unusual for to see a guy do it with the guy Brandon Neely's talent this close to the draft, but probably hasn't hurt his stock either. I mean, Neely's kind of made himself. He started the year, I think, as a closer, went in the rotation, has kind of come back as that, that closer nobody wants to see who can come in the sixth, and it's pretty much over at that point.
Right. Yeah. You need 9 outs, and he's good for 9 outs and can shut the door. Yeah, those guys are so valuable. And that's only going to help his stock, as you said. I think the draft is in Dallas, Fort Worth this year. Later this month. So if he can start, if he can come out of the pen, it's going to be good news for him moving forward the rest of his career.
Now, I'm trying to remember, was Biddle a kind of like a sidearm or three quarters delivery guy? I feel like he had a little lower arm slot.
He wasn't.
Am I imagining that?
He wasn't sidearm. He was kind of three quarters. His main pitch, it was called the thing, and it would just fall off the table. That's what they called it. And for 1 year, he was unhittable. He was incredible. And again, first round pick, and then just one of those things. His elbow just never recovered.
Let's see. What else have we not covered with Florida today? Let's see. Home runs from Caglione and Shelnut. They only had 4 hits today. My goodness. But they made them count. Yeah, I mean, that's just sometimes postseason, it's taking advantage of stuff when you've got it in front of you. And I just feel like this Florida team's been opportunistic. Now, I don't know, and we'll preview these games when we know the matchup. We'll preview Tennessee against whichever ACC team it gets. And then I guess we do have it set between Kentucky and Florida. But we can look ahead a little bit. I'm sure Neiman will throw for for Kentucky tomorrow because that's what they've done all year. I guess they could go Travis Smith, who is their midweek guy. And actually, Travis Smith is probably the biggest pro prospect out of all their starters, if you include the midweek guy. But he just didn't have a good year. So I don't know how much you can count on him. I mean, you could see him in long relief if it doesn't work out for Neiman. But I guess Florida, who they start in that game three at Clemson? Because Caglione started game two, didn't he?
They went Clemente that game three. Okay. It was Clemente, and then I believe they threw Jameson out there for a good bit in the middle innings. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my guess, Chris, for tomorrow, if I had any, we haven't seen Coppola this series. I think they could just either open or start with him. Because Clemente did go an inning today, but with that being said, I'm looking at the pitch count he had. He had 10, so he could go back out there and pitch some innings if he wanted to, but a safe bet, I think, would just be Coppola for the Gators. Once again, I don't know if we've said this yet, Brandon Neely, I think, will be out there tomorrow if I had to put money on it, towards the end, if I had to guess. But yeah, I would say Coppola, just because we haven't seen him. You could go, I think you could go Clemente again if you wanted to, maybe Fisher Jameson if you're feeling bold. But I think Florida's pitching will be fine. They kind of just got to copy what A&M did today and just make sure they keep runners off the base paths. And looking at this game against NC State, they had five walks combined between the four pitchers out there and gave up six hits. That's a little dicey, I think, if you play Kentucky, if you do that. I don't know if it's the end of the world, but I think you got to be a little bit better and a little bit on point. I'm not asking Pierce Coppola to go out there and do what Ryan Prager did. I think that's a little unreasonable, but I think you got to kind of manage and control the game on the mound as best you can with the walks. I think you just got to make Kentucky earn it hitting and getting the ball down in play. So that's the key there. But once again, if I had to guess a pitcher for the Gators, Coppola would be my guess.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, Alfred. I just couldn't remember if I was forgetting somebody. Fisher Jameson went 52 pitches on Saturday night. So you could bring him back. Neely's gone 23, as we said, and 45. I wouldn't think you'd see Liam Peterson again. Here's another. Kate Fisher only threw three pitches against A&M on Saturday. Did not throw today. Kate Fisher did throw today. Went four. Of course he did. I think it's Pierce Coppola, but the question is, how much can you get out of him? And remember, he's the kid that was a big time draft prospect, I think, in 2021. Went to Florida, just has not been healthy since the middle of his freshman season. And they brought him back, and you've seen little flashes of dominance at times, but he just is never able to put something together. In fact, I don't think he's gone four innings in any of his appearances yet. And more often than not, they've been just kind of give you two innings, give up two runs, that kind of thing. But if you just want something off the radar, he is a big-time talent. Can get it up there at 98. He looks like, if you squint a little bit, looks like a little bit like a Randy Johnson kind of thing with that delivery. Big, tall guy, lefty coming from the left side. He's not Randy Johnson, of course, but you know what I mean. It's that kind of difficult angle to hit. And, if we look up and Florida's done something crazy tomorrow, it was Pierce Coppola. Let's not forget that the talent's there. Now, would I bet against it? I would, especially against a team like Kentucky, because you got to be very fine with your command and control or Kentucky will kill you. And when you're a guy like that, like Coppola, coming back from injury and not been healthy, that can take a while. So I think odds are against it. But if something happens, it's just really out of the box. Then that's it. But I think Caglione today, not being able to give them more than they gave, than he gave Sullivan. I think, Graham, I think that really ate into some of their pitching depth.
It did. And that's kind of been, I guess, the question mark for this Florida team. Like, how deep is this staff? Like, offensively, the talent is there. And you see a lot of guys in their lineup with double-digit home runs. It's just pitching is so valuable, and they're kind of I'll be fascinated to see, do they start Coppola? I'm looking at it right now. He last pitched 15 days ago. That was a season high 4 1/3 against Nebraska, and he gave up four runs on four hits, gave up two home runs in that game. like you said, talent is there off the charts. Like, do they go with him and does he have the game of his life, or does this veteran Kentucky lineup just do what they've done all season long and just put so much pressure on you? And Kentucky's relentless. Like, they just grind at bats. And they just always seem to find a way to win and to be in it at the very end of the game.
Yeah, Kentucky's got a lot more pitching depth left. Yes. I'm trying to see who we've forgotten on. I feel like there's a guy or two on the Florida side that we've forgotten. Mendez is a guy they can use.
McNeely. Or Mendez,
excuse me. Oh, Luke McNeely. And I knew we were forgetting somebody. I mean, they still got enough arms. Robert Satin. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of dudes there that, there's a few. But I think that, man, you really would have liked to gotten Caglone at least into the fifth today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think you needed to be, and especially tomorrow or next game against Kentucky, you need to be efficient with every guy who's out there on the mound. I think you could trust that with Neely. You could trust that with, it's Neely. I think if you look at guys next game against Kentucky, you could trust it with Neely. The other ones, I don't know if I trust it with all of them yet. Like, if we see Coppola, McNeely, Menendez, guys like that get out there, I don't know if we could see it with all of them. They need to be a little efficient, though. I think if you see Coppola, let's say if he starts and he goes two innings or less, I think you run into a really big brick wall if you're Florida, and that spells trouble for them. So yeah, I think just looking at what Caglione did today and comparing it for the future, you just need to be more efficient, especially when you're playing Kentucky, because Kentucky gets small ball, you know, better than anybody in the country. They most certainly can do it better than NC State can.
You know, we forgot Ryan Slater too.
Yeah, that's another name.
Three starts this season.
Oh, you know what? Slater's been out. No, he hasn't been out. I think he missed some time early in the season, I feel like. I guess they're just really monitoring his workload. He threw an inning against Nebraska, an inning against Oklahoma State, and last time before that, it was the regional against Georgia. So, yeah, I mean, we haven't seen him since Stillwater. So you would think maybe there's something going on with health or workload, because even when he's thrown, what, 8 pitches, 28 pitches his last two. That's mm-hmm. all he's thrown in June. So, yeah, could be something going on there. All right, I'm trying to think if there's anything we haven't touched tonight. I want to bring this up. I just presumed that he had a hamstring injury. I have not heard Jim Schlossnagel's press conference yet. We started this before the game was over. I would think if a guy had cramps, you could probably deal with it, but
they're probably, I would
not think it was cramps, but I'm just trying to make sure we haven't missed something here. If Jim Schlossnagel's spoken in his press conference and addressed the Lavalette situation, then I'd like to know what the diagnosis was there. But it sure as heck looked like a hamstring.
Yeah, and if what we're seeing right here on the screen is the case with a cramp, my only thought about Schloss leaving him out the rest of the game would be he's just nervous sick because he just had Montgomery and Sadeo go down. So he can't afford to have Lavalette's the last person on the list you want to go down with something like that. So yeah. I'm sure he was just like, I trust the rest of this team, you know, to get it done. And to this point, he's been right. I mean, they've gotten it done. So that's the other way I look at it. But yeah, it's certainly weird. I mean, cramps happen. You know, we see cramps on the football field, for example, and, you know, you stretch the leg for a minute or two and then the player's fine. He goes back out there. Obviously, baseball could be different, but, you know, that's my way of thinking about it. That's how I think he'd go about it. If that's the case, I think that's pretty reasonable for Schloss at this point to do that. And that's my verdict if I had to guess on something.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, here's the other thing. At that point, you still got 12 outs to cover, right? And I know Kentucky was getting no hit at that point, but you had to figure Prager was kind of coming to the end of the line. You know, you got a great bullpen. You don't really want to go to back to Aschenbeck again because you just used him a bunch. And again, they got a bunch of arms, but that's the guy you get the ball to, like Florida does Neely, when you just want to have your best chance of shutting it down. I don't know. I would think if it's a cramp, you can deal with that with Pedialyte or something and get him back in the game. Because at that point, taking your best hitter out with Montgomery already out, I just don't know that you want to do that against a Kentucky team that can score runs the way it could, which makes me think it wasn't a cramp. But again, we're, you know, who knows, right?
Could be anything. Could be anything. We had Eric in the chat say Schloss said pulled his hamstring a little bit in quotation. So yeah. I mean, that's definitely the case. The good thing about that statement is if he did say a little bit at the end, that means hopefully hydrate yourself a lot and leg elevate, rest, you know, elevate it, that sort of thing, and keep that.
Pickle juice.
The formula for getting you back out there the next game. I think that would be the case then, because it seems like to me, with everything we're hearing and kind of just putting together, you know, as we watch the game end, it seems like there's a good chance he could be back out there, which is huge for A&M, obviously.
Yeah. I don't know. Graham, do you ever pull a hamstring a little bit? I mean, I feel like maybe that happens, but everybody that I see try to recover from a hamstring, it feels like it comes back, you know, a day or two late. It feels like that always ends up worse than it started.
Right.
I get it. You're at the end of your season. You can't afford to send him out. You need to let him go, and maybe you can squeeze something. I'm concerned. Maybe he did pull a little bit, but it just feels like that's a lot to ask. Although, someone points out here, Nolan McCarthy's playing with a tweaked hamstring. So maybe you can do it. It just feels like a lot of times that doesn't go the way you'd hope it would go.
Well, the other thing, like these guys, like they're young. You remember what it was like to be 18, 20 nowadays? Like if I sleep in a weird position overnight, I wake up like I'm in a car crash. Like my left elbow hurts. So it's, hopefully he'll be okay, and like he'll be good to go, and Texas A&M will be as much as they can be at full strength for their next game.
Yeah. Anything else with the games today that we didn't touch on? Matchups looking ahead. Alfred, I'll go to you, then I'll go to Graham, and then I'll kind of surf the comments here and see if there's anything we need to address that our listeners brought up. Alfred, you first.
I'll build off with Florida just because, you know, we're going to get them first, obviously, with that Kentucky elimination game. I liked what Graham said a lot about he listed guys who are 0-for or not hitting well at all so far in Omaha. A lot of them were the role guys alongside the main hitters you see in like Caglione and whatnot. And if for Florida to really kind of beat Kentucky on the offensive side and to go further than anyone ever expected them into a possible championship series, they have to get production out of those role guys, because you're not at the point now in your season where Luke Heyman, Cade Kirkland and the crew can just kind of sit back and let the other hitters do their thing. They kind of got to step up too. And one guy on the Florida team I've been impressed with, it hasn't always been getting the bat to the ball, but just offensively in Omaha, has been Dale Thomas, who's been kind of quiet this year for them. He's gotten on base a good bit for them. He had a clutch hit to kind of bounce back. It was an automatic double against A&M in that first game to not win it. Obviously, they still lost, but to bounce back into that game and make it a ball game, he's been huge. And he batted what, Chris? 210-something, 220-something this season. So he was a no-show, but he's coming up at the right time. If Florida can get the rest of their guys doing that Graham named, that's scary. And because we've seen what their pitching can do, and it's almost like they've put it together so well so far, and they're right on the verge, I think, from what we've seen in Omaha, of them fully doing it and fully showing us the Florida we should have gotten all season. And if they do that once again, watch out. other teams in Omaha, because you're going to face a tough, tough opponent that looks like a top five team in baseball if they're playing that way.
Graham?
I know for me, I just kind of look at this game between Florida and Kentucky, and I think it's just going to simulate what we saw in the regular season. They played a little over a month ago. Florida won big in their only win in the three-game series, and then Kentucky just won two nail-biters in extra innings. So I kind of think this game is like somebody will either win like convincingly, like there's going to be no doubt at all, or it's going to be an absolute nail-biter just because you have a very, very veteran Kentucky team, a lot of guys that are 23, 24 years old in this lineup that have just been through some battles. And then you got a Florida team pitching maybe a little bit limited. Offense hasn't been there yet in Omaha. Will the bats come to life, or will it be Kentucky, you know, coming out on top? I think it's a fascinating matchup, and you know, one I'm definitely looking forward to seeing who's going to come out on top.
Yeah, and that one will go six tomorrow night. We'll have North Carolina, Florida State will play at one, and these times are central. So Tennessee will know its opponent probably around 4 o'clock central tomorrow. Then A&M will have to wait to see, but you know, familiarity being in the same league either way. But you mentioned Alfred, the comment on Dale Thomas. Thomas stopped playing at some point in the year. I don't know if it was injury or ineffectiveness, but Thomas is back at third now. They had Shelnut play in third. Shelnut moved to right with the Evans injury. And so you had this whole domino of stuff that happened late in the year with Thomas now being in there. We talked about Ashton Wilson getting some time. So just kind of interesting to see how injuries affect things. We talked about Caden Kent getting an opportunity in that Oregon series because of the Montgomery injury. I mean, and he played a lot anyway, but I think that was the direct – you know, he's playing that Sunday game. I mean, he might have played anyway. He was in a platoon, but he gets that opportunity and makes the most of it. Feels like Florida's been very opportunistic in that manner throughout all postseason. But I want to get to some questions and comments quickly. Somebody points out Kentucky's first loss of the tournament. That's a good point. Kentucky never been playing with that kind of pressure, being a national seed. Never played a super regional at home, I don't think. So hats off to Kentucky for getting this far. That's the worst performance they've had in a while. But again, that worst performance is probably not a great way to describe it. It's really more like Ryan Prager was just awesome tonight in the way that he can be. Let's see what else have we got here. A little questioning of Nick Mangione in the batting order. Yeah, and you see this at times where they don't always statistically go with their best guys hitting in those spots. I mean, it could be – I try to think if they go lefty-righty. I don't think they really do that. But Burks is a guy they can bunt and run and hit and run and put into motion and steal bases and stuff like that. I'm not necessarily saying that's what I would do. I'm more of a modern baseball guy, but you do see that some. And hey, Nick Mangione made it this far with the way he's done things. So I think that's probably some of the genesis behind that.
Burks also has 19 steals, and for a catcher, that's incredible. So there's a lot of Kentucky guys on this list. Obviously, a lot of these Kentucky guys have stolen bases, but Burks is, I believe, third on the team. Yeah, third on the team in steals. The other two ahead of him are Petrie and Waldschmidt. So that could be another reason, too. I mean, he's one of their biggest steal threats, even though he's a catcher. So they want him to get on early. And I don't know, you get him on early by letting him bat in the first inning. So that's my other kind of, side note to that.
All right, here's one. I think Tennessee is everybody's who's watching. I feel like this is kind of consensus between everybody's fan base. It feels like Tennessee is the team to beat right now. I know that's not breaking news, but it is baseball. And look, if you line Tennessee up against any other team right now, I think A&M could have come close with Montgomery and Lavalette if they were healthy, but they're not. But, you know, here's the thing. You don't go head to head. You know, your lineup doesn't play my lineup and we battle out. You got to go pitching. And I still feel like A&M has got a sneaky good shot to win this thing just because you count the innings it needs to fill. And I feel like they've got dudes that they can keep throwing out there, especially with the way Prager went deep in the game tonight and them having bought some rest by being up 2-0. Graham, I'll start with you. I just feel like Tennessee still feels like the team to beat. I took A&M before the tournament, would probably stick with that. I think, you know, the Montgomery and Sadeo injuries made it awfully tough. I think the Laviolette thing could be Laviolette. That's how you pronounce it. I keep getting that wrong, so apologies there. I feel like Tennessee's still the team to beat, but when you can match innings with those guys like they've got, I feel like A&M's pitching is better what they've got left, and you just never know with that.
Yeah, pitching will be the difference maker for sure. But, I mean, the reason why these two teams are where they are, offense, especially in this ballpark in Omaha, I mean, double-digit hits, you know, they can put it in the gap, doubles. We've seen them both hit home runs. The thing that really fascinates me about Tennessee, we touched on it a little bit earlier, but one of the craziest stats in my mind in the college baseball world is no number one seed has won the whole thing since 1999. So, I mean, that over the years, that just kind of shows you, like, there's a lot of pressure that comes with that, obviously, and that takes a toll on you mentally. And so this is a Tennessee team that they've had all these battles and they've been through these wars over the years. They have all these scars and they are not only are they good offensively and they have good pitching and all that, but mentally, I feel like that is where they have elevated this season and especially in postseason. Just being the number one seed and trying to be the first number one seed since 1999 to win the whole thing.
All right. Sam says the talent coming out of the SEC this year is amazing. I agree. Graham, you followed it a long time. Like I don't ever remember, and I feel like I said this last year too, but I feel like it keeps getting better. Do you remember a year where the SEC had more talent top to bottom than it's got?
No, not at all. I mean, I do feel obviously we're biased. Like the SEC over the years, it has been the best conference from top to bottom. I mean, the number of resources they go into it, look at the attendance, the top 10, top five in the country, it's going to be littered with SEC teams. But I mean, to me, one thing that stands out, like look at Charlie Condon. I mean, that's a guy, he had one offer coming out of high school to Georgia. Georgia takes him and he has just put up video game numbers this season. And if this league can find somebody like that, that has one offer coming out of high school, and then he's going to be a high first round draft pick, it just shows you the quality from top to bottom in this league and just how much it's grown and developed over the years for sure.
Alfred, you're newer to this, but you were coming in this. I mean, the SEC has been phenomenal for as long as I've watched it, which has been 20 years or so now. But I mean, you really are coming into kind of a golden age of SEC baseball. And I think you're seeing that in the TV ratings.
Yeah. I think we said it. I mean, I think the stat that speaks for itself on that too, 11 teams in the tournament, the NCAA tournament overall. I mean, you had teams on the bubble fighting to get in. You have teams hosting. There were teams all over the place in this bracket. And we, at the beginning, you know, we could talk about the teams who got knocked out earlier, like with Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, for example. Those were two teams that had very good, you know, Hoovers, and it kind of just went awry and it in the tournament. And it just goes to show how deep it is. And I remember just being at Hoover and everyone telling me this is, you know, as close to Omaha you'll get without being there. And obviously there's people at Omaha right now and with that going on with the World Series, not that, with the World Series going on. But I think it's just the best kind of brand of baseball you can get. You get the best hitters, you get the best pitchers out of guys like Hagen Smith and Prager and you know, the list goes on and on and on. And we're going to see tons of people get drafted in the first round. I mean, I could rattle off names right now. Moore, Amick, Condon, Caglione, just tons of guys who are hitters who are just going to thrive in Major League Baseball with, you know, what scouts have seen out of them. And I feel blessed, you know, kind of get into the sport sort of now, you know, as a whole with the SEC now. And, you know, because I think it's, I'd have to agree comparing it to what you two have said and, you know, just looking back on kind of stats from old, it just seems like it keeps getting better year on year. And Chris, you said it. I mean, you said it last year and you're saying it again this year that this conference has never had more talent than it's had before. And, you know, that beat last year, you saying it. So yeah, I feel blessed, you know, to be in this conference with all this talent. We're going to see a ton of these guys in Major League Baseball. And I mean, this conference is now 4-0 against the ACC. If we're doing head to heads in Omaha, and that just goes to show you that they're the kings of the sport. And I mean, that speaks for itself right there.
Oh. Yeah. Answering the next question, is the ACC beating the SEC team in this year's? No. Now the ACC did take Georgia out of this event in Athens a week ago, so there was that. I meant to bring this up. Key play of that game was the bunt. Who was it that laid the bunt down? I don't remember. Great bunt down third. It went probably 15 or 20 feet down the third baseline, probably 15 feet. And Jackson Appel jumped out of the catcher's box, you know, positioned himself and made a throw at first. I think that ended the inning. I don't know if it ended, but I mean, it was a key play in the game where, like, that's the kind of play where Kentucky puts pressure on you. You've seen a bunch of teams throw that thing into right field and a run or two scored. That was a big play. And the one that Grohovac made at third to start that double play when Kentucky had first and second with one out. Those were two big defensive plays. Fielded that one at third, stepped on the bag, and threw a strike. So, again, that's one reason I've kind of been big on A&M. I just feel like I felt like the two teams that would eventually separate themselves were Tennessee and A&M for different reasons. I felt like Tennessee's lineup has got a little more fireworks in it, but I mean, A&M's is pretty good too. A&M's pitching's a little better. I feel like I trust A&M's athleticism defensively a little bit more, but again, that's also taken a hit with some of the injuries. And you saw Caden Kent, I think, have a hiccup at third tonight on a throwing error. So don't know if that comes apart with the injuries or not. Let's see. Here's an interesting one. Can Christian Moore play his way in the top five of the draft? I don't think so. Your top five, and I'm looking right now at MLB.com, and they go Travis Bazan at Oregon State, number one. That's interesting. Condon got passed just in the last week or two, followed by Charlie Condon, Caglione, Nick Kurtz of Wake Forest. I'm not as sure about that one, and Chase Burns of Wake Forest. Then you go down Hagan Smith, J.J. Weatherholtz, Braden Montgomery round out the top eight. By the way, note all college players. I don't think, Graham, I don't see him getting past Bazana, Condon, Caglione, Burns, Hagan Smith, or Weatherholt. Do you?
No. I mean, he could definitely continue to have a very strong postseason and definitely be in the conversation for first round. But, I mean, the way the Major League Draft works – like a lot of these scouts organizations, these guys are they're pretty set in their way, and like they already have a good idea of where they're heading and what they want and need, whether that if they want an arm, if they want a position player, that kind of a thing. I just think you know, he has a very good chance, obviously, especially if he stays healthy, you know, to be a first round draft pick and go from there. But top five, that is, you know, that is a little bit too rich. But I mean, he's a fantastic player, so he definitely has a bright future.
Yeah, and it's a strong draft year. I think my thing with him, I'm just not sure what he is defensively.
Mm-hmm.
If he was DH only, which I'm not saying he is, then that's hard to get a top five. Now, no, the draft is different too, right? You may target a guy. It's not like the NFL draft. You may say, hey, we can take this guy you know, 10th overall. He might be 20th on our board, but we'll save a little money. We can sign him, right, save that money down the draft. So it's a little different than just ranking them one to whatever. I think the position thing, because sometimes he does make some really good plays, but sometimes he will just and that this was my impression of him too. I wonder to see him. I just imagining this. That's MLB pipelines right up on him too. Was the defense was really uneven. I've never seen a second baseman. I shouldn't say never. You don't see a lot of guys that bulky at second base. You know, Ron, if you want to go way back, Ron Gant for Atlanta was one of those guys. But Gant was ended up getting moved to the outfield. That's going away. You just don't see many 214-pound second basemen. It just you need to be a little bit more fluid and nimble. And I'm not saying he's not athletic. I could see him more in right. There's some talk of playing in center, but I don't know. Center field's a primo position defensively. You're talking about gazelles running out there. And I'm just not sure that's Christian Moore. He is what he is, and what he is pretty spectacular for the good things. But it's the it's the finding the defensive home that I'm just not quite. Yeah. I mean, to me, he's a right fielder. Maybe he's playable at third if the arm is accurate there. That's a much different throw than from second. But that's.
You know, it's kind of similar to, you know, Kyle Schwarber when he was at Indiana, you know.
Yeah, good call.
Is he a catcher? Is he an outfielder? And, I mean, he's barely caught at all at the major league level. So, bottom line, if you can hit, they're going to put you in the lineup, and then they'll figure it out defensively. And that's probably more than likely what's going to happen with Christian Moore.
Yeah, a little question about you've seen this. I feel like we've seen this a lot in postseason. Is that all? Is the ball in the glove or not? Where you know the runner's foot's there and the ball's getting in the glove, but is it gotten all the way in the glove? That one comes up a lot. I don't know the clear. To me, the clarification would be when the ball stops moving.
Yeah,
when it stops its motion, when it hits the back of the web and it's done. I mean, it'll settle in the glove, but to me, that's when it's a catch.
Here's the big thing. For situations like this, whatever is called on the field is key. Like every year before the season starts, head of the SEC umpires, like they have a conference call. They go over numbers from a season ago, and then like points of emphasis for this season. So, an example. Whatever was called on the field, this is last season, not this season. Last season, whatever was called on the field, that play stands 78% of the time.
Yeah.
So it very, very, very rarely gets overturned. So whatever is called on the field, not all the time, but most of the time, it's going to stand.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, we've been at it for about an hour and 12 minutes. I think we'll wrap it up. We are going to do some previews of SEC games coming up in Omaha when we have the matchup set. We'll probably do Kentucky-Florida in the morning, and we'll wait on Tennessee to see if it gets UNC or Florida State before we break that one down, because that's a big difference, especially who's pitching. So, parting thoughts. Alfred, I'll start with you. Anything on the way out we didn't get to?
I'm just trying to I guess, you know, the SEC has puffed its chest out here in Omaha, you know, regarding I think being 4-0 against the ACC is a big deal, and it helps us three out with, you know, what we have to talk about, obviously, and hopefully that continues to be a thing, because I think, well, we know for sure now at least one side of the bracket is going to get an SEC team in the title series, and we're TBD on the other side, but Tennessee's giving us a pretty good chance of getting them in as well. So, yeah, I think all trains are leading to the we're going to get an SEC title series station, and I'm here for it, and I'm sure both of you are here for it as well.
Absolutely.
I think the big thing for me is just I'm not really surprised with the teams that have made it this far, and like Alfred said, we are definitely on track for the fourth season in a row with an SEC national champion.
I think it's more than that, isn't it? It's let's see, it was LSU last year in an all SEC final, LSU in Florida. The year before, it would have been Ole Miss and Oklahoma, Ole Miss winning, Mississippi State beating Vandy the year before. So that's COVID. Two out of the last three. COVID, and then the year before that, 2019 Vandy. I think 2018 was Oregon State.
Yeah.
And was 2017 Florida.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Arkansas was a – I don't have to remind Arkansas fans how that one ended. But and then it was 17 Sully's year that he got one?
Mm-hmm. Against Oklahoma. Okay.
And then 16 would have been Coastal Carolina, 15 would have been Virginia, 14 would have been Vanderbilt.
So, yeah.
A lot of SEC in there.
So what, five years in a row, five different teams?
Looks like it.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, because if an SEC team wins it, it won't be any of the four we just mentioned. So that's crazy. Mm. Yeah, there was something else here. I've lost it. If it was that important, I would have mentioned it in 75 minutes of doing this anyway, I think. But that's the way it goes. Hey, enjoyed it tonight. First time as a three-man booth. Graham, really looking forward to you being part of things here going forward. This is the first time we've all worked together at the same time when we flipped the switch on tonight. So we're getting used to it.
We definitely made it work.
After last night, it seemed like it was a lot easier when I couldn't get my internet to work and had my dog growling at me and all sorts of hazards here in the home office. But yeah. Thanks to you guys for joining me. Thanks, everybody, for watching. If you are watching and you haven't subscribed, do that. Leave a like. That helps us get noticed. If you want to enable your notifications, that lets you know when we've come out with our next stuff. We do some live stuff. Most of our stuff is not live. But those things help you get our stuff. And we cover football, baseball, and basketball. Oh, by the way, name change coming soon. That mm-hmm. word 14 at the bottom, as so many people have noted, will be going away. So that's which is going to get flipped soon. Anyway, tons of stuff coming up. We'll have some baseball previews coming up tomorrow. Hope you'll catch those. And we will live stream again probably Wednesday night at this point. We'll make that determination later. But anyway, for Graham Doty and Alfred Esmond, I'm Chris Lee. We are Southeastern 14. Thanks for watching. We will see you again soon.